Okay, we're a bit late again, and we've reached number 9, review of Lower Columbia Sturgeon Management Policy C-3001. This is a briefing. Guy Norman and Pat Frazier, come forward. We've already had quite a discussion about sturgeon this afternoon with our stakeholders.
So this is the one that they gave us. And then if we use the
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Deputy Storer. Again, my name is Guy Norman. I'm the Southwest Washington Regional Director for the Department. And with me today is Mr. Pat Frazier, the Regional Fish Program Manager for Southwest Washington. Today, we're going to discuss white sturgeon status as per the Commission's 2011-13 policy. And in that policy, we are committed to review several topics associated with Columbia River sturgeon management. They're listed here in the PowerPoint. Number one is the stock status, as we continue to measure stock status on an annual basis in the Columbia River. Predation rates, specifically sea lion predation on Columbia River sturgeon. Review of the in-season management actions, the seasons and the actual catch. Accounting of fish left unharvested. We did have direction from the Commission that as we were implementing the seasons on the Columbia River that if indeed we were meeting season objectives, we didn't have to catch every last fish on the allocations as a conservation measure. Review of harvest outside the Lower Columbia River, specifically the coastal estuaries and Puget Sound. Bycatch of sturgeon in all the fisheries. Review of any new recommended management actions that we may have pertaining to new information that we have attained in the past year. And then other pertinent information, and I guess I would say specifically the other pertinent information today is that in the last couple of years, Oregon has now completed a sturgeon conservation plan that was adopted by their commission last fall. And included in that is a recommended long-term sustainable harvest rate in that conservation plan to be implemented in 2014. So some of the highlights of the 2011-13 Commission policy. This is the sixth three-year policy that we've had from the Commission since 1996. Highlights from a conservation perspective, precautionary management approach, of course. Management objectives are to increase the abundance of the legal size segment of the population and to increase the escapement into the spawning segment of the population. And those objectives have been front and center for a number of years in sturgeon management, have been included in all of the accords since 1996. Look at the 2011 management actions, and in those management actions, look at the downward trend in legal size abundance, and the idea is to try and get on track to increase that legal size abundance, account for the increased season sea lion predation that's been occurring since about 2002, assess and address the recruitment into the legal size segment, and also within these conservation objectives provide fishery stability. Now, with this commission policy guidance, it's led to working with Oregon, a director-to-director relationship to develop a joint state management accord to regulate the fisheries. Also, it coincides with a three-year agreement, 2011 to 2013. In that is included an agreement for an annual review and update, both staffs working together, technical staffs, to assess the information and evaluate that information. In that agreement is a maximum harvest rate of 22.5% or an overall catch of 17,000, whichever is less. And this is a bit different than we've had in the past accords. In the past accords, we've had a harvest guideline that we've set for 3 years, and we assess that after 3 years. With this accord, we look at the 22.5% harvest rate. If the legal size segment of the population reduces, then we also follow with a reduced harvest in the following year. And it's based on the current stock assessment, so an annual stock assessment, which is different. We now have the capability to look at this population on an annual basis. And the idea of the harvest plan is to provide population growth, specifically the legal size population, which ultimately leads to increase in the spawning segment population size. So also provided in this joint state accord, consistent with the commission policy, is an annual review of the harvest guideline to assess if indeed we're on track to meet the conservation objectives. And that's all related to the updated stock status and any other pertinent biological information.
Before you go ahead, Commissioner Jennings has a question.
Just a quick clarification. The third bullet, the harvest rate of 22.5%, are you saying that that's based on the compact accord as opposed to the department or Washington State Fish and Wildlife policy? So I was wondering where that number came from.
It's in the accord, but it is per the direction of the commission policy.
Because I don't see in our policy any number that says a harvest rate.
And I think what the reference is that in the policy itself, while we were relating to the 22.5% that related to the 17,000, and then asked the commission for to direct the director to negotiate that with the. So the actual specific harvest rate comes in the accord because it's after the negotiation between the two directors.
Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Pat Frazier to go over those topics that we're reviewing today.
Okay, I'll provide you an update on all of those topics and then pass it back to Guy for what we're thinking about for 2012 management. But the first one is I want to go over some of the stock assessment tools we have at hand as we start looking at this population and tracking this important species. First of all, there's a long-term legal abundance estimate that's been in place since 1987. WDFW has been the lead, and it's a tagging program where we tag the fish and then we recover them in subsequent sport and recreational fisheries. One of the challenges with this particular database is we have to wait a year and a half to 2 years to collect the tags and the fisheries to get an adequate sample size in return. So it provides us a look at where we were a year or two earlier rather than a future look. Most recently, ODFW started a set line tagging program and a set line recovery program. They've done that for 2010 and 2011. One of the advantages of this particular data set can actually predict into the future and gives us real-time data to manage on. However, it's only 2 years old at this time. Another one that we have to look at all times is catch rates in sport and commercial fisheries, especially the recreational catch per angler fisheries, the information there. That CPUE typically tracks with the population. In the case of the sublegal CPUE, it tends to lead to where the adult population is going to go or the legal size population is going to go. Another one we have is we have what's called Young of the Year sampling, or an Age 1 productivity index for us. The fish that spawn this spring-summer time frame, they put out their juveniles. Their juveniles are available and floating in the river up near the Bonneville Dam area in the September, October, November time frame. So we go out there and capture those, and we get an estimate of the rate at which we capture those, and that gives us an index of how many fish spawn that year and how productive they were. And the last one is the ODFW population viability analysis. Guy talked about the Oregon Conservation Plan. This was a key part of that conservation plan, and a real linchpin to their whole conservation plan was this analysis. And one of the keys to that was they developed an age-structured populations dynamics model. And that's a model that can predict different, all the age classes through time, and that's the one that provides us the ability to predict forward and look at real-time data rather than follow what had happened. Here's a look at the two abundance methods, estimates we have for abundance methods. The squares are the long-term WDFW database I talked about. As you can see, since 2007, there has been a fairly steady decline in the population. That's not unprecedented. If you look at the start of this data set, you see a similar decline to even a lower abundance level back in the late 1980s, early 1990s. With some rebound, it did rebound from that. The two red dots are pretty important to look at. The two red dots are the new ODFW methodology. So you can see that new ODFW methodology puts a pretty similar estimate as the WDFW methodology. So I talked earlier about catch per unit effort information. Here's a look at what the legal and sublegal catch per unit effort information has been telling us over the last several years since, actually this is since 1982, so this is nearly 30 years worth of information. You can see that the catch per unit effort for the sublegals was pretty low in the, was down in the mid-1980s. It climbed through the 90s and the 2000s, and that also tracked with some better abundances. In recent years, you've seen that drop. In the last couple of years, you've seen that very flat. The last 4 or 5 years, the sublegal catch per unit effort has been very stable. And I'll talk about that in a minute when we talk about the Oregon model and their predictions for abundances. The legal catch per unit effort has been pretty stable over the last 20 years or so, bouncing up and down a little bit. The last 4 or 5 years, it went down. There were several years in a row it went down. The most recent year, 2011, you can see it bumped up a little bit. I talked about the young of the year and collecting those young fish. This is the data from that. We had some data from years ago, a very short data set, but this was reinstituted in 2004 in a way to try to get us to start tracking how the productivity of the spawning success is of these animals. And this is an index that isn't perfect, but it gives us some idea from year to year. As you can see, 2010, 2011, the number is fairly low. But then if you look at 2009, we had an extremely high number. 2004 through 2008 were pretty stable and pretty consistent. Right now, this information is showing us some fluctuation here in recent years. We're not exactly sure how to interpret that or what to interpret this with, because it's only about 6 years old, and we really don't have a frame of reference for some of the past more productive years to tell us what is a productive catch per set. So over time, we'll build this data set, and it'll begin to inform us more and more. But it does give us a relative idea of that. In 2009, it looks like we had some really good production. Unfortunately, we had a couple down years here, the last couple. I do want to talk a little bit about the stock status in the Oregon population dynamics model. As we mentioned, that's brand new, and Oregon spent a couple of years. And when we say Oregon, while it's Oregon's model and in Oregon's plan, they did work closely and collaboratively with WDFW to develop this model, and we have reviewed it and think it is a valuable model and another valuable tool to help us manage this population. This model predicts an additional decline again of 65,000 legal fish. If you think back to the graph, you saw the two red dots. The second red dot went down from where the first red dot was. So it's predicting a similar trend as our long-term abundance is. The one thing this model does do, and this is where it's a little different than the CPUE data, it does predict that there will be a short-term increase in abundance in 2013 and 2014. So we have a little bit of conflicting data from the different data sets we have out there. One of the key things about this model is, one of the real advantages of this model is it really starts to pick up the key and evaluate the key parameters that affect the health of a sturgeon population and where the sturgeon population is going. It incorporates productivity estimates. It incorporates mortality between age classes, an annual mortality rate, and it incorporates growth rates between age classes. So it's a full life cycle model. That's an age-structured model, and that gives us the ability to track the population closer than we have been able to in the past and incorporate more of the things that impact the long-term health of this population. Speaking of long-term health of this population, here's one of the challenges to that. That's predation rates from sea lions. Here you can look at the sea lion abundances. Interestingly, the California sea lions over the last 3 years have been down a fair amount. This is the area just below Bonneville. It may be that there's just as many Californians, they just don't want to go up to Bonneville because, as you can see, the big mean stellar sea lions have come up and maybe pushed them out of an area they were in before. So we've had, and when you look at sea lions, the stellar sea lions are the ones that tend to do much more of the predation on sturgeon than do the Californians. Californians focus more on the salmonid predation. Here's a look at the predation rates, and this is the area just below Bonneville Dam. In a couple of slides, I'll show you that we've been able to incorporate this data and use this data and expand it to estimate mortality rates for the entire Columbia River. And we did that just over the last year. That's part of the work we've done with Oregon to improve our data sets to manage this population. You can see it started out pretty low in 2006, less than 500 fish, and it's been a pretty steady rise up to just under 3,000 fish in 2011. Those were based on a good, solid observation plan operated by the Corps of Engineers from Bonneville Dam. But when you look at it, it's important to look at what size fish they're eating and where the predation is occurring. This graph is pretty clear, and it shows that the predation is really heavily focused on fish that are 2 to 4 feet in length, and that's where the vast majority of that predation occurs, and that's where those animals are really focusing their feeding on. The other one that's really important to look at, too, is that they only, when you look at the oversized fish or the over-legal fish, the brood fish, the fish that are longer than 6 foot, they represent only about 1.4% of the mortality. If you look at actual numbers, that would represent for 2009, that's 94 fish. For 2011, that's 116 animals. And for 2014, that's 148 animals in terms of actual fish that are in the broodstock size that we care about a lot. As I said, in 2011, we expanded our efforts in terms of sea lion predation monitoring. We added 15 miles of monitoring. So we used to go down just to about a mile below Bonneville Dam. Now we're going clear down to 16 miles below Bonneville Dam, down to Cape Horn area on the Washington side here. We have also been able to estimate total mortalities for the entire river. And for 2009, we estimated there were 6,700 total mortalities due to sea lion predation, 8,300 in 2011, and we're projecting that there would be about 10,600 in 2014. The other thing we do that's very important is we manage the fisheries and we track the catches versus the allocations. And here's a slide that tracks the Lower Columbia River sport fishery and how we performed in terms of our management needs. We've split the fishery up into three sections or three sub-allocations for the total sport harvest. One sub-allocation is below Wana. We call it the estuary fishery. The other allocation is from the Wana all the way up to Bonneville Dam, and we call that the Main Stem Columbia allocation. And there's also a allocation for the Willamette River. 2 years ago, the Willamette River was open 365 days a year, 24 hours, 7 days a week. So it was a full-blown fishery. It's only within the last year or two that we've been able to move it into an allocation frame. That was done in response to the huge increase in catch rates in the Willamette. For whatever reason, there's a lot of fish there, and they're biting real well in the Willamette. So we needed to manage that fishery consistent with the Main Stem Columbia River fishery. As you can see, the allocation below Wana was 6,800 fish, and we came underneath that at just over 6,100 fish. above WANA, there was an allocation of 3,400 fish, and the actual catch was just over 2,900 fish. And the Willamette, there is an error on that slide. That's actually 2,040 is the allocation, and the catch was just a little bit over that at 2,170 fish. Overall, the allocation was 12,240 for all those recreational fisheries, and the catch was about 1,000 fish less than that at 1,209.
For the commercial. Pat, if you could go back, sorry to interrupt for just a second, to explain that. That is actually the total catch allocated to the Willamette, but a little over 500 of those are the background level. So all of our tributaries in Lower Columbia plus outside the Columbia, we have a background level. And then the allocation for the conservation is on top of that. So that's what Pat was subtracting there, was a background level, which is not formally part of the allocation.
So with that, on the commercial fishery, we have four allocations. And these, in the sport fishery, those are separate allocations that we do not exceed and we don't want to exceed because it's impacting another fishery. With the commercial fishery, these are more fluid allocations. They're really kind of guideline allocations that they're basically target catches we want for those different fisheries, so they allocate their total catch into these different fisheries. So if they come up less in one particular fishery, they may go higher in another fishery. So in this case, the spring fishery, they only caught 200 out of the 800 fish that were allocated. So the summer fishery, they caught a few more than the 400 at 470. The fall fishery, a few more again, 2,400 as compared to the 2,000. And the select area fisheries were identical to their allocation. Overall, there was about just over 100 fish left unharvested from the commercial fisheries. So when we look at it, one of the things we wanted to know was that you wanted to be updated on is how many fish were unharvested from the fisheries. First of all, I want to look at the harvest rate. We talked about a 22.5% harvest rate. When we look at this year's harvest rate, it was actually 19.5%. So there was a fairly significant reduction in the harvest rate at the end of the day after all the fisheries were managed. Overall, the catch guideline was 15,640. There was a catch of about 14,500, so there was just 1,152 fish that were not harvested that could have been harvested if we would have maximized that. One thing to note is, in the past when we did that, we managed on a 3-year total catch, so those fish would have been available for harvest the next year. This year we are not doing that. Those fish will not be harvested, and the allocation will start again at whatever level we set it for this year. So those fish are actually banked for future population growth. Guy did mention management outside the Columbia River, and he managed that fisheries need to be managed consistent with our accord principles and what we're managing the Columbia River fishery in. In Wolpaw and Grays Harbor, we've been doing this for well over a decade, and there's a pretty consistent plan on how to do that. We have set catch quotas and managed those catch quotas, and over time, those catch quotas have reduced fairly significantly as the Columbia River has reduced its in-river catch quotas. Puget Sound is a little bit different of a situation. When we started this and the allocation began and we had the accord way back when in 1997, there wasn't even catch record cards. Catch record cards came to be in the early 2000s, and when they came to be, there was a catch of about 100 to 200 fish annually in Puget Sound. Since then, in most recent years, the last 2 or 3 years especially, with reduced salmon fishing opportunities, people have turned to other species to fish for, and sturgeon has been one they've turned to. Our most recent catch estimate is actually 911 fish in those fisheries. So at a time when we've reduced our Columbia River fisheries by 75%, we've seen a very large increase in these particular fisheries. You will see something, and you've already been briefed on, and I know, I think in February, you will set sport fishing regulations, and there is a regulation for Puget Sound to address this situation. In the sport fisheries, all our catches outside the Columbia are managed via catch record cards. In the Columbia, we have a statistical creel program to estimate those catches. Oops. Another important topic is bycatch. In this case, we focused on sturgeon bycatch. We felt that that was really the most important piece. One of the key things about bycatch is what's the survival rate of those fish. And sturgeon are very hardy fish and pretty tough fish. A Fraser River study estimates somewhere between 2 to 3% post-release mortality for both sport and commercial fisheries. Those fish were actually held for 3 days, so it is a short-term mortality. In another study recently done, ODFW captured over a couple years, captured about 200 fish in gill nets, and they held those fish in net pens for 48 hours, and there was no mortalities at all associated with that. And when you look at the condition of them, the majority of the fish, the vast majority of the fish were healthy when they were, but there was a portion of the fish, I think 15 or 20%, that were lethargic, they termed as lethargic. They checked those fish again at 24 hours and 48 hours. All of those fish were in healthy state within those 48 hours, so they recovered pretty quickly. One of the things that we try to watch is bycatch. We monitor the bycatch. In the sport fishery, we actually have the creel estimates of the bycatch. In the commercial fishery, we try to do some onboard monitoring when we can. In the winter season, spring Chinook fishery and spring Chinook fishery, we have onboard monitors out there, and they can collect data regarding sturgeon. Over the last 3 years, in the summer and fall time, ODFW and WDFW have done some monitoring of onboard monitoring on gillnet fisheries that were occurring out during those time frames to verify that what we are assuming in terms of handle rates of bite of sturgeon is appropriate. And the information we collected is very consistent with the past information we have. One thing that's always a big part of sturgeon fisheries is there is a substantial handle of sublegal and overlegal fish. And that's to be expected. Bycatch is going to be high in the fishery because less than 10% of the fish are in the legal size class that we're really targeting. And when we talk about those population abundances that I presented, that was that legal size class. When we talk about these mortality rates that I referenced, that's of that legal size class. It's not of the entire population. It's a very important thing for us all to understand. The other piece is incidental mortalities. Some of the changes we've made here most recently is because of the Oregon model and that age class model, we can actually include those mortalities now in our future projections of the population estimate, and we can account for them in the modeling, and when we set our allowable catch numbers, we can account for those fish, those mortalities. So the final slide before I pass it over to Guy is, this is the joint state accord that Guy talked about, and if we were the joint state accord for this year would call for it prescribes a 22.5% harvest rate or a 17,000 catch, whichever is less. For 2012, the harvest rate would be less than the 17,000 cap, so we would actually, based on a 22.5% harvest rate, reduced the guideline to 14,500. The projected legal size abundance that we would base that on would be 65,000. And with that, I'll pass it on to Guy.
Thank you, Pat. So what we're asking the commission to consider here today are actions for 2012. And what we want to lay out here is what the WDFW goals are for 2012. Given the fact that this legal size population did come in less than expected, or the projection in 2012 is less than expected, the 65,000 number, the expected recruitment of fish that were 35 to 37 inches to recruit into that 38-inch minimum size did not materialize at the magnitude that we thought it would, and therefore the legal size population is projected to be down to 65,000. Because of that, and because we've been involved and from a technical standpoint and reviewed the Oregon Conservation Plan as well with that exploitation rate target of 16% by 2014, which is in place to, or it's The conclusion is that it will sustain the population and grow that population if it's implemented in 2014 and continued thereafter. What we would like to do, because of this recent information, is implement a harvest rate like 16% earlier than 2014. Specifically, implement that by 2013. We would like to also, in 2012, then reduce the harvest rate, not all the way to 16%, but a transition harvest rate of halfway in between, which would be 19.25%. That would reduce the harvest rate, total catch on these fish, and start transitioning to this lower harvest rate as currently prescribed in the Oregon Conservation Plan. The reason we wouldn't want to go to 16% immediately in 2012 is one of the objectives of the Commission policy and the Joint State Accord is fishery stability. We think it would be extremely difficult and challenging if we were to go all the way down to a 16% type harvest rate to kind of maintain the same fishery structure that we already have in place for, in particular, the sport fishery. Sub-allocations between the main river, the estuary, and the Willamette, differential size slots. Those were all established with assumptions of a much higher allocation for the sport fishery than these numbers would equate to. And we just think it would be real difficult to proceed without some major changes in that structure without a thorough public review before we move that far. We think even dropping down to 19.25% will also be challenging, but likely doable if the catch preventative effort stays similar to what it was last year. So in doing that, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is also presenting to the Oregon Fish Commission today as well. We're uncertain of what that outcome will be, but we would like the commission to delegate the authority to the Washington director, Director Anderson, to negotiate an accord adjustment. So in the middle of this three-year accord, negotiate with the Oregon director to transition into this lower harvest rate sooner than 2014. The next step then would be to adopt specific sport and commercial seasons at the January 26th compact hearing that are consistent with commission direction and the negotiated agreement between the two directors for a modified accord. And then following that, what we think would be real important to move forward with in 2012 would be have our technical staff, our scientists, work with Oregon to identify a long-term sustainable harvest rate. As I indicated, we worked cooperatively with Oregon research staff to develop the model for this 16% sustainable harvest rate starting 2014, but we would like to engage further in 2012, further review that, and just take a look at that from a long-term perspective, given the most recent information that we have in front of us. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we would like to initiate a public process to take a look at if indeed we have a substantial change in harvest in 2013 in the downward trend, then we would talk about fishery structure and if we do need to modify sub-allocations, size limits, season structures, etc. So just to wrap it up, this is the last slide. Here is what the harvest would be under two scenarios. Number one, just continue to implement the current Joint State Accord at 22.5%. With the 65,000 projected population, that harvest would drop down to 13,500. Now, that's compared to 15,640 that Patrick showed in a previous slide as an allocation for 2011. It doesn't equate to the 17,000 because the 17,000 doesn't have the modified catch to account for the different size limit in the estuary. estuary. So we have a different size limit in the estuary that is, it's there to try and extend that season through the 4th of July. And so you have a higher minimum size limit, a narrower legal size slot in order to try and extend the number of days. It reduces the catch rate. So we modify that 17,000 down to 15,640 in order to put that in spawning escapement equivalents. The bigger the fish you catch, the more it costs you in terms of spawning escapement equivalents. So 17,000 equals 15,640 for 2011. It would equal 13,500 for 2012, given that legal size population estimate for 2012. If we drop to 19.25% in 2012, it'll drop that down to 11,500. So if you want to compare that with the harvest guideline for this year that we operated under, it's 15,640 versus 11,500, so approximately 4,000 less fish. And then underneath that, we've indicated what that percentage of, in terms of the management guideline for 2011, and then the percentage those are relative to the actual harvest in 2011. And as Pat indicated, we did not harvest the entire allocation. We exercised conservative management and didn't extend season in order to catch all the fish. And that concludes our report.
Okay, thank you. Lots of questions, I'm sure. It's 5 after 5, so I'm not sure whether we can conclude a discussion and satisfy everyone's desire to talk about different aspects, given the testimony we heard earlier. There's going to be a lot of questions, but let's give ourselves, let's see if we can go till 5:30. And then decide what we want to do with this information. Commissioner Jennings?
Some questions, and we can get back to the guidance. Is there still a catch and release fishery for brood stock?
So we have taken some significant steps over the last several years to really reduce that catch and release fishery for broodstock. Specifically, we've got a sanctuary in place from May through August that goes about 15 miles downriver from Bonneville Dam to Skamania Island, lower end of Skamania Island.
To reduce that focus on where the broodstock is.
Right. And then that time of year, the broodstock is congregated in that Bonneville area for a couple of reasons. One, they're either getting ready to spawn, they're actively spawning, or they're recovering from their spawning.
So in that sanctuary, while we're not focusing, while we've reduced the recreational impacts from catch and release fisheries, we do have gillnet fisheries that are continuing to go on.
So in that sanctuary area during that time frame, May through August, there's no directed sturgeon fisheries for the sport fishery. I think the time frame you're referring to is when we have substantial harvestable summer Chinook and substantial harvest upriver bright fall Chinook. There is some commercial seasons, typically 2 or 3 days, to target summer Chinook in the late June period, and then a few days of targeting upriver bright fall Chinook in late August.
And our broodstock often caught as bycatch? Caught or released, obviously, but
there's some catch and release. The numbers, I don't know if we've got the monitoring data here with us or not, Pat. We do have some numbers. I don't have those in front of me. The sport fishery is also open for salmon during those time frames as well. So there's directed salmon fisheries. What is closed is a directed sturgeon fishery during that time frame, and it was primarily focused on target fishery, catch and release fishery on those.
You talked about the mortality, the sea lion mortality and the age class structure, and only 1.4 of the percent plus or minus is broodstock. but that's about 100 individuals. We don't really know what the broodstock population is below the dam, but I've heard numbers like maybe 6,000, or any rough numbers, or...
So while we don't have exact estimates, if you look at the Oregon model and the information in that, it says 11,000 is the number of the broodstock population up in that area.
So that's better than I thought, of course. We don't really know what that number is, so there's a little bit of uncertainty there. But when you add this increased mortality from the Stellar Sea Lions plus the poaching that we know is going on, then I'm guessing we're looking at maybe 200 plus or minus broodstock being taken each year above and beyond what would be natural mortality on a population that's only 11,000. So, and those are long-life species, so that's actually a fairly high increase in mortality rate for those individuals. That's just a concern. On slide 13, you talked about the first-year productivity. But is there any confidence intervals around those numbers? I mean, that 2009 looks really good. Was that because you hit they all settled on the right patch when you sampled it? Or what sort of confidence is around these estimates so that we can have some confidence? So what is our confidence in the precision of these?
So there's no confidence intervals in part because it's really an index, and it's a catch rate rather than a specific estimate of number of fish or those kind of things. So it's not a number estimate. Like I said, this is a new data set, and right now it provides us some information, but we should be cautious of exactly how far we leap with this particular information because we really don't know exactly what it means. It would have been very, very helpful for us to have enough hindsight to have some information in the 90s when the population was doing well and growing, and to have some of this data from that time frame to compare it to, but we just don't. So we're really in the process of building the data set. It's one of the pieces of data that we're collecting and trying to do a better job of understanding this population. It's not as helpful as it is say, 4 or 5 years from now. This will be a much more helpful piece of information because we'll have some kind of track record knowledge of what's good and bad.
And in spite of our lack of confidence in the number because we don't have a lot of trend on it, it is one of the three major inputs into the PVA model.
This specific data is not one of the three major inputs. We track
productivity. Productivity,
this is only one piece of productivity. This isn't the only piece. So there's a variety of things that go into productivity that they use in the model when they develop their productivity estimates. For ease of math and working things through the model, they assume all the productivity impacts occur in the first year, from age 0 to age 1. But the reality is impacts on productivity occur from a variety of ways, and so those are incorporated in there.
On the Oregon set line approach, do they use circle hooks?
I'm not. I do believe they do use circle hooks, yes.
I'm just wondering if we should be looking at requiring circle hooks for all recreational fisheries for this. That's just an editorial comment.
Well, I'm glad you did bring that up because there is an outstanding issue that we need to bring forward to. We've done some evaluations of circle hooks and we've done some investigations into those that somewhere in the near future we'd like to bring you a briefing on the circle hook issue.
This past year the target harvest rate was 22%, but functionally it turned out to be 19 point something. And yet under 19 point something we still saw declines.
Yeah.
So that really causes me concern about, well, if we're just moving to 19, but we got 19 last year, we still got declines, that sort of raises questions.
Commissioner Jennings, I have to ask other commissioners, too, if they have questions, because...
I thought we were just going through, and I'm happy to do one at a time, so...
Yeah,
sorry.
Well, let me make sure that we're getting fair representation here.
I think that David is covering a number of issues that have been discussed in the Fish Committee, and I'd let him go forward, because he's hitting... I think what the rest of us will have less to say if you allow him to go forward with this.
Fine.
The number estimate of 65,000 that we're basing for this year, is that based on the new technique or the old technique?
That is based on the new technique, and it's a projection for the abundance we expect to see in 2012.
And with a confidence interval of 69% plus or minus, using that point estimate, when you're so much higher than the old technique, also just sort of raises questions about, is that a precautionary approach or a conservative approach to how we're moving forward with this?
So I think what we're looking at, I mean, the reason we're working towards transitioning to annual management associated with that is we've got the capability to get a within the same year estimate, and then it gives us the opportunity to project 2012. I think over time, we're going to continue the traditional method, which is the gillnet tag and recapture over about a almost a year and a half period, so you don't get the, you're about a two-year lag before you get the information. I think we're going to, we've only got 1 year of comparison. We'll continue to compare over time. I think we feel pretty good about, you know, the fact that it's from a trend standpoint, it is consistent with the same trend we're seeing, even though the data lags. And another precautionary, you know, the actual point estimate's not 65,000, it's 65,000 after we subtract for an estimate of 10,600 sea lion predation. So we're taking the sea lion predation off the top and then using that, you know, the result or the difference there in order to manage. So we're trying to incorporate some, you know, some other conservative aspects into the
number. And if we only have 1 year comparison between the two methods and there's distinctly different in the answers, which really drives the total harvest, where's the, why did we pick the highest number with no track record as opposed to the average between them or the old one while we figure out if the new one is actually as precise as we think it is, even though it has a confidence interval of 69%?
So I think what you're referring to is the 2010 estimate for with the traditional method was 66,000. That was also the first year that we had the set line estimate, which said 87,000. We don't have a 2011 or 2012 projection with the old method. What we have is the 65,000 with the set line and then subtracting for sea lions. So it's unknown in terms of what how they would match up in 2012 because we've had 2 years of recruitment and that sort of thing. So I think we're comfortable that there's some advantages in real-time information. We'll gain more certainty over time. If indeed we're using the traditional method, we'd be 2 years behind, and we would, you know, we'd manage with whatever that number was for about 3 years instead of a one-year change.
And then my last question for now, slide 7. What I heard today that we closed the sturgeon fishery, at least part of it, in the late 1989 period. The gillnet fishery or recreational.
So during there was about a 4 year period or so where we did not have sturgeon seasons outside of salmon seasons, but the overall commercial catch or commercial allocation during that time frame was about double what we have today. It was about 6,000. So in terms of total catch, you know, even though they weren't outside of salmon season, it was substantially more sturgeon catch during the period.
Thank you.
Commissioner Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair. Guy, assuming this year's population estimate of 65,000, did you model a 16% exploitation rate? And if so, what was the maximum harvest limit?
Just happened to have that slide.
I kind of wondered if you might.
I know the answer is 9,600.
96.
Right.
And that's right now the 19.25 exploitation rate was 11.5.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's where we're thinking that if we start moving down to those levels, just to do due diligence to our public, we really want to have a thorough public process and not, don't really have time to do that for 2012.
Okay. Commissioner Perry?
Thank you. Some of the public input indicated there was a lot of mortality by catch of these fish. Have you done research work? You indicated you did some work on circle hooks, but is there really a lot of mortality of these fish in that respect?
So we don't have any direct Columbia River mortality studies as such. The best mortality study that is out there is the Fraser River study. It was a pretty extensively done study. It used hook and line methods to capture sturgeon for sport fisheries, and it used gill nets to capture sturgeon to represent commercial fisheries. Those fish were held for 3 days, and the mortality rates of those fish were 2 to 3%. So we believe there's a very low mortality rate associated with the bycatch in these fisheries, in all these fisheries, and that's probably the best piece of data that's out there and the best study that's out there.
Thank you. I think it was slide number 7. You just had that up there a second ago. I don't know whether you can get back to it or not. Anyway, my question was in the low 80 or late 80s, it showed an extreme decline down to very low population, and then it sharply is coming up. How come that happened? What factors were involved in that decline and then recovery?
Pat's looking at me because I was around back then, I think. So I think a lot of the same situation we have right now. We had reduced recruitment. During that rebound period, the actual average harvest rate was somewhere just under 40. I mean, total harvest was just under 40,000 fish. So what happened was that we had we did incorporate all kinds of changes during this time frame, too. We changed size lengths. We did a number of things. We stopped gaff hooks. There was a whole bunch of measures that are currently in effect right now, sturgeon gear changes, all kinds of things. But I think the big difference was that the productivity, the recruitment came back. So even though we had a higher harvest than we're implementing today, we had quite a rebound, and it was just like I believe the biggest factor is right now. The key is that recruitment from the productivity and then the resulting recruitment from the sublegal size to the legal size. If I recall back then, I think we were... we had some recruitment of somewhere around 60,000 fish a year coming into that minimum size limit on an annual basis. And, we're seeing quite a bit less than that right now, as we did in the late 80s.
Thank you.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Gentlemen, do you have any data that would reflect the forage situation for Columbia River smelt back in that same time frame that the fellow commissioner just spoke of? Is there a downturn in the forage availability, or do we have anything that we can compare now versus then as far as that issue is concerned?
So I'll jump in, Commissioner Carpenter, and Pat can add to it. But we had real stable runs of smelt back in the late 80s, early 90s. It was really mid-late 90s where we had the downfall in the smelt population. So I don't think there was any measurable differences between the late 80s and the early 90s.
Second piece, what is the current status of the smelt? Are they recovering at all? I know that's indirectly related, but...
So Commissioner Carpenter, we've had, we probably had 9 or 10 years in a row of very poor smelt returns. Last year, we did not have our test fishery in place, so we didn't have, a database, a measurement, but there was a lot of anecdotal information. There was a callus tribe research dipping in the callus, our larval sampling, and that's not anecdotal, that's actually scientific, suggested that we actually had a pretty good return last year. There's some indicators based on the larval sampling, age class predictions, plus some incidental handle in the shrimp fishery that actually 2012 may be pretty decent as well. So, whether it's going to sustain or not, I don't know, but there's at least some positive indicators coming right now.
Thank you.
Commissioner Jennings?
Yeah.
Oh. Commissioner Mencken?
A couple of questions. Do we have any data to show what the physiological effect on brood animals is from handle? For example, what happens to egg absorption when the fish are handled at a large size in the brooders and the breeders?
So there are no studies directly on sturgeon that talk about that. There are some sturgeons, some studies that occur in other species that have talked about egg reabsorption. One of the things we have done in the past, we've worked with Dr. Molly Webb from the University of Montana, and we've done a lot of sampling of over legal fish, large size broodstock up there. Those broodstock in some cases were captured using gill nets for the purpose of a private sturgeon hatchery on the Oregon side for a short period of time that is no longer operating. There was also working with sport fishermen, primarily guides, to capture their fish and have their fish passed off to us. At the end of the day, we did a lot of sampling of cortisol levels from both of those, the sport and the commercial fisheries, handled in both of those fisheries, those that I just described. In each case, the cortisol level was up, and there was some increased level of cortisol. The challenge we have is we don't have anything that says what level of cortisol, which represents increased stress, what does that mean in terms of egg reabsorption and death? We don't have anything that tells us this is going to cause this or this is going to cause that. The one thing we did do was we looked at egg reabsorption in the population, and we only saw out of the fish we observed, and it was a pretty large sample size, I forget what it was, there was less than 3% of those fish that showed any level of egg reabsorption at all. So it's not a widespread prevalent problem where we would have seen a lot more egg reabsorption in those fish that we were capturing through those methods.
I have one other request. We've talked about the measure of productivity is that goes into the PVA model, and I know you've said you'd get that information to us, but I think that at least the Fish Committee, maybe the entire commission, would like to see, because that's a fairly important parameter in the model, and I think we would, just based on scientific curiosity, I'd like to see what goes into that, because certainly there must be some assigned some doubt as to whether that really is an important parameter in the model. I'd like very much to see that, if you would.
I'll work with Brad James and the Oregon staff and bring that to you. And
thank you.
Schedule either a briefing with the committee or the commission as a whole, whatever works.
Thank you.
Commissioner Jennings?
Just some comments. In the public testimony we heard this afternoon during the public comment period, what I was really struck with was it seems like both the recreational fishers and the commercials are in front of us on conservation, that I heard consistently from the recreation folks, drop the exploitation rates. What I heard from the commercial folks was, if it takes it, we're willing to take a freeze, not a closure, not a permanent closure, but a freeze or moratorium, and also take the most conservation approach possible. When I look at what you put in front of us as a recommendation at 19%, 0.25, To me, that says, well, that's where we were at functionally at last year, and we got a decline. Mm-hmm. Our policy calls for an increase. All of the users are saying, please address this decline. The feedback I'm hearing from you is fishery stability. What I'm saying, when in my head, I'm saying, if this decline continues for one or two more years, I'm looking at, do we need a moratorium entirely? And so by going to a 16% rate now rather than in a few years may well make the fisheries much more stable over the next decade if it keeps us from having to have a moratorium altogether when we drop below a level that we're not comfortable exploiting. And so there's a real balance in my mind of how do we push Oregon to come along with us when in fact the user groups seem to be ahead of us on the fact that there's a real problem here. I'll stop there, but from an editorial comment, it just seems like we need to be much more assertive about what we're doing with sturgeon.
Commissioner Duvia?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I kind of echo Commissioner Jennings' points. Not being as astute as some of the room on fisheries, but I look at this chart and knowing our modeling is helpful, but the trend is probably the only relevant thing we get out of it. You look at 95 down today, we're in a serious problem. Or if you look at 2005, it shows us it's really serious problem. You look at our take, the trend tells us that we're down at the bottom. The stakeholders today told us we're bleeding to death. We're going to have to do something drastic. We can't take these baby steps and continue to let this trend continue. And the nature of this species, that being so slow to recovery, we need to be more serious in our next year's rule setting. And if we, you know, little things like a smaller take, why are we fishing in the broodstock estuary? A little more stress in the late winter season on them for 55 fish. If we don't do step up this year, then I don't know how many years we need to shut it down before we have fishing again. So I think we need to take a little more serious look at protecting the stock. Like Commissioner Jennings says, I think we're not nearly conservation enough. And if we have to have one more dot up there, we have to shut her down. And you know, for us as an agency, from my understanding, if we get below 10,000, it becomes a management difficulty. Very expensive, lots of time, so it's not any advantage to us to do it either. So I'm at a quandary why we're not being a little more conservative.
Commissioner Mackin?
Just one more comment before I lose my voice here. In a very simplistic way, if you drew a line through the last 4 years of abundance numbers, it gives you, in the most ridiculous case, it gives you about 3 or 4 years before you're at zero. So, you know, it's down, what is it, Guy? It's down over 50% in the last 4 years, the last 5 years?
Yeah, maybe 40%, perhaps, yeah.
Okay. So it certainly doesn't look very good to me. And I think what we're heading for here is something that could be a real disaster, and I think we need to move on it real fast.
Commissioner Smith?
I agree with everything that's been said. I don't foresee the stellar situation getting better either. I see that line, unfortunately, probably going up, you know, population-wise. So the predation will probably increase.
Okay, we've reached 5:30. We've had a very good discussion. I think you've heard common theme coming out of the commission. There's a lot of concerns about that downward trend. We did delegate to the director the authority to negotiate with Oregon's director under the compact. We've been told that the compact meeting is January 26th. does a decision have to be made January 26? What's the time pressure?
Madam Chair, we have, well, the seasons are already underway. Other than Oregon did an emergency closure on the Willamette because they recognize that whatever the allocation is, they are going to have a very short fishery. So for those early fisheries in the main stem plus the Willamette, it's important to have the number so it can be managed for.
Okay. Okay, so we've got a time frame. We've delegated this authority to the director, but we did have some statements in our policy about our expectations, including under the policy guidelines, provide recruitment and regulatory protection to increase the abundance of the spawning population, manage with a precautionary approach. So there was an expectation that we would be comfortable in these annual reviews if we were seeing that trend line going up. We're not real comfortable with this, it sounds like, but we do have to speak with one voice. And I think we can, after this review, develop a statement from the commission of advice to the director, further guidelines given this situation that we want him to take to the compact in the 26th, but we have to vote on it. We would have to speak with one voice. And I would suggest we don't have time to draft such a statement tonight, but we could work on that tomorrow so that before we leave this meeting tomorrow, we will have considered what we want to say to the director. Given we do have other parties to consider here. We have to give him enough discretion to come to an agreement with Oregon. So that's just a next step, perhaps, that I can lay out so that we can conclude this meeting for today. Does that sound like a good idea? Commissioner Mencken?
I suggest that that's a good plan if we can get the language together. In the absence of getting that language together and agreed upon by the entire commission, I suggest that we get the document together, have the commission review it, and then perhaps, when is our next conference call?
Yeah, we do have a conference call before. It's going to be the 20th. So that's another option.
That's a good idea.
To put something together for the conference call. Okay. Well, then we've got a plan to consider one or the other of those to articulate with a common voice our advice to the director. Hey, thanks very much, guys. Really interesting. I'll look forward to next year's, too. So we are going to recess until tomorrow at, let me check to make sure, 8:30. We'll take up the sport fishing regs. Thanks.